G'day everyone, and so good to be here. Really, really excited about our next guest. And as we do here at Business Benchmark Group and the sharing and the podcast series that we run, we're really excited about some unique and very, very, very progressive and interesting human beings on this amazing thing we call the globe, the world. So our next guest, Nicola Curtin, who is the co-founder and creative director of Classroom of Hope, something we have very close to our heart here at Business Benchmark Group, an Australian not-for-profit organization building sustainable schools and homes for people in developing countries using recycled plastic waste. Wow. We've recently built two schools with Classroom of Hope in the beautiful island of Lombok to two very remote villages that were, I guess, victims of the 2018, earthquakes and devastation that occurred. And we are absolutely excited and in awe of what Classroom of Hope has have offered these people, and more on that as we go throughout this podcast. However, Nicola works closely with Classroom of Hope's local partners, documenting and capturing inspiring content to bridge the gap between the donors and the impact they make, and therefore ensuring that there is this connection and this story, this amazing story to be told. Her qualifications in journalism and sociocultural anthropology. Now, I've never put those three words together in one sentence. I'm really looking forward to unpacking sociocultural anthropology. Make for a unique combination that allows her to carefully inquire into the realities and complexities of stories from the field, with empathy and cultural understanding, while bringing creativity and storytelling into the non-for-profit section. Without a further ado, really excited to have you here in this podcast. Nicola, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Stefan. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, that's an awesome sort of runway into who you are and what you do, and and the amazing work that you do there at Hope Classroom of Hope. However, for those listening who don't know you, tell us a snapshot of you and what a day in the life of you looks like, Nicola.
Okay. Well, the morning starts off by, you know, putting on my mum hat and getting my kids out the door and fed and ready for their day. But then once they're off and at school, you know, most of my days I'm at my desk, and as the creative director, I guess I'm really in charge of our brand, of how we're seen by the public. But underneath all of that, I'm really passionate about storytelling. I really believe in connecting our donors to the impact, as you said in my bio there. So a lot of what I do is around reporting and ensuring that everything that we do, every school that we build, every student that we help, that that's reported on, and that that's transparent, that it's on our website, that donors get impact reports for what they've helped us to achieve. So a lot of my work is around impact reporting, but it's also around the brand. It's our website, it's managing teams and working with teams who help us to create our beautiful website, social media. And then other days, you know, not every day is the same, which I really like. Some days it's about meeting new donors. Sometimes it's about taking donors into the field. That's one of my favorite things to do. I get to do that with you and your team in a few weeks' time, which we're really looking forward to. So, you know, we're a small team, and that means that we all wear a lot of different hats. But mostly my job is around the creative in our organization. It's around storytelling, and it's really about making sure that donors know that they've made a difference.
Wow. And you know, when you put your hand up to, I guess, you know, everything starts with an idea. Everything starts with a, wouldn't it be great if, you know, or what if, and therefore we create a plan, and we go on a journey, and occasionally we look back and we think, hang on, look at how far we have come, or look at the impact in your case that we are making, and I look at the people we're meeting and or impacting along the way, which is a remarkable thing to do. But I guess, you know, tell us a little bit more about Classroom of Hope and the inspiration. I mean, other than the devastation that occurred, and then the opportunity to do something or make an impact about that that helps so many, tell us a little bit more about Classroom of Hope and why was it that we decided to create and definitely scale something that is making a significant difference in your part of the world. Tell me why that was the idea to be pursued.
Well, Classroom of Hope has been around for a while, over 10 years now. And initially, we started as a charity completely focused on education, bringing education to children living in developing countries. And we still do a great deal of that in building schools with recycled plastic waste. So I guess the real shift happened when the 2018 earthquakes hit Lombok. My husband and I, who, Duncan and I founded the organization together, we were living in Indonesia at the time, we were living in Bali, and we felt these shakes. We, had to get out of our home right away. And, we saw damage within Bali. Like, we thought the epicenter was Bali. And then the more we're on, learning and unfolding and news is coming out, we're realizing, wow, that was Lombok. That epicenter was in Lombok. And then you start to hear all these devastating stories. And we just knew, we had to help. We had to do something. So we started by building some pop-up schools in the northern region of Lombok, which is where they needed the most support. The pop-up schools were always meant to be a real temporary measure. They were quick to build, and it got kids back into learning as, as quickly as possible. Because the risk without doing that would be that a whole generation of children would drop out of school. So the pop-up schools were great. They served a purpose, but we knew, there needed to be a permanent solution because children learn half as much in temporary structures as they do in permanent structures.
Wow.
And while we were, looking for a solution, Duncan came across this organization, Block Solutions, that had been building with blocks made from recycled plastic waste. This is an earthquake-resistant solution to the problem that we were looking for. And on top
Wow.
of that, it cleans up the environment. You're removing plastic waste from the environment, reducing carbon emissions. Everything we learned about this product, it just made so much sense that we had to try this. So that's what we did. We started with a pilot project to import the blocks over from Finland to start building a new school. We started with a five classroom school that then turned into a six classroom school as our pilot project. The government and the community was massively involved, our local partner. We always work with local partners to implement our projects. And it was a huge success. It was just so well received. The teachers loved it. The kids loved it. The parents loved it because everybody felt safe in these structures. All of our students now, they want to be in these structures. They want these blocks over, bricks and mortar. And so after that pilot project, we did another three or four, and then another four. Up into the point now that we've built 17 schools in Lombok, and we've got a pipeline of schools to go. And this is how we're building from now on. We just see so much value in building this way, not only for, earthquake affected areas, because they give that safety element, but also because we're getting kids back into school while also cleaning up the environment. It just feels like such a no-brainer.
Oh, it's just mind-boggling to know that this is an option. It's available, it's efficient, it's effective, it's quick, and it's long-lasting. Like, the piece that definitely gets my attention is, yep, we're recycling plastic, which is an unbelievable thing to be engaged in isolation, let alone we're educating and or creating structures, and some of those structures are homes as well, right? But from a
Yes.
schooling perspective, we're educating children that at this point are in what we would regard as third world countries. And the power of third world country education is that the power of educating girls and allowing not only the boys who typically would be educated, but also the girls to be in an environment where they are safe, they are taken care of, and more importantly, this is the future. This is the next generation, and I just think it's a very, very, very powerful combination. It's environment, it's education, and it's a 100-year plan, which I think is phenomenal. So, power to you and what the Classroom of Hope is doing. And for anyone that's listening to our podcast that again hasn't been on the Business Benchmark Group journey, as it relates to the last 12 months and our commitment to build two schools, and we're not far from attending those two schools and having the opening ceremonies in the next week or two. For those of you that are not familiar with Classroom of Hope, please go to the website. very simple classroom at home, the typical HTTP website stuff, and check it out. It's a very inspiring and very easy to get engaged organization, very much so. So back to you, Nicola. This is a podcast with you, and thank you for sharing the journey thus far with Classroom at Hope, and on a personal level, being a mum, that's how your day starts, and by the end of the day, you're a phenomenal human being. So what has been your number one biggest learning in business or life? And if you think about the last, 5, 10 years of your life, what has been your number one biggest learning in business or life, and how has it helped shape you and your, I guess, your career, your pathway to impact?
Definitely really early on in the journey, Duncan and I realized that people were a little bit scared sometimes to give to non-for-profits. They didn't always feel like they knew where their money was going. And that has shaped a huge part of what we do in Classroom of Hope, because it helped us to start researching organizations, non-for-profit organizations that are really good at connecting the donor to what the impact is that they help to create, and to proving it, being super transparent and showing the impact. And so learning that really early on shaped so much about who we wanted to be as an organization. It shaped so much about my role in the organization, learning how to, really communicate that message to our donors, how to storytell, how to show them what they've helped to do. And in that also, it's trust. It's really about trust, transparency, and trust. And so also relationship building. A lot of people who come on board to support us have supported us for a long time. They start with us and then they want to stick with us. And I really think that's because we put a lot of effort into showing them not only that we're transparent and not only that, their impact made a difference, but that once you're in the Classroom of Hope family, you're in. And we want to hold on and nurture that relationship. And so I think that for me, right from the beginning, was really big and really helped to shape Classroom of Hope and the direction that we took the organization.
And again, if I sort of take on board with what you just shared there, and think about my journey in philanthropy and the elements of giving back. I mean, we are a business coaching business, and when you think about business coaching, really, it's about it's helping people adapt and adopt a new way of doing things. It's not telling people how to suck it. It's because, I mean, running a business, you either are or you're not. You're either leading or you're not. And therefore, I've yet to meet a bad business, to be really honest with you, Nicola. I do meet interesting business owners who consistently make some interesting decisions. So for me, it's about engagement. And I mean, last week we had our appreciation lunch here in Melbourne with our highest 15 supporters, or our donors that supported us on the journey. The commitment we made to build two skills in North Lombok, and the appreciation lunch was again about showcasing, this is where we started, this is where we are, this is what's been achieved, this is what's ahead of us, and you enroll and inspire, most importantly, engage people on the journey, and this is definitely not about me, and it's definitely not about Business Benchmark. It's not even about Classroom of Hope. It's about what the collective, what a tribe can do as it relates to building the cathedral. And
I love that. Yeah.
the power of philanthropy, and this is what we teach our clients, right? Or this is what we impart as it relates to the journey for our clients. The first stage of anything you commit to as a professional, because many of us have been in business or in jobs, and then we realize, oh shit, I better get professional about this, right? So the first stage that we take as an oath, when we say, okay, I want to be better, I want to do better, I want to have better, is you move away from the dumb stuff you've done in life, right? You move away from bad habits towards good habits. Eventually, that becomes a rhythm, and then you now have the power and the confidence and the passion and the purpose to move towards things, which is your second phase in goal setting, right? Because now you believe you can, and all you need is a yellow brick road, and stay true to the accountabilities and the responsibilities and the brutal truth as to are you or aren't you on the yellow brick road. And then the third phase, as it relates to life success, and life success is doesn't have to be big, but it's a journey, right? It's the giving back goals. So the first set of goals once you get serious in life is I want to move away from bad habits or bad things. Second phase is because you can and you trust yourself to carry it off and finish things that you started, I want to move towards. And then it's about giving back. They're the three stages of goals is in fairness what I've learned in life. And I relate it back to, it's about engagement. You can't do things on your own. There's enough room in this world. And when you think about abundance, there's enough for everyone. It's just about truly someone needs to lead that and plenty follow it. So really resonate with your answer and your sharing there in your number one biggest learning. Really, really cool. What are you most proud of in your life? Like, what would you say? And you're at a stage, and if you take on board with what I just shared just then, which was a little tangential to the question and the answer, but if you take on board with what I just shared as to the three stages of goal setting, what do you think is going to be your number one legacy? Now that's a big, big question, right? And
That's a big question.
as I look through the lens here, you're looking like you're at about that 1500 to 1800 week mark of a life that's worth living, right? So what do you think is going to be your number one legacy
Wow.
as you look into your future? And being an amazing mother to children is one legacy. I know for me, fatherhood has been one of the best things I've ever done. However, what do you think is
Yes,
going to be your number one
motherhood
legacy?
is definitely up there, absolutely. And look, I don't know if I've ever thought of Classroom of Hope as a legacy, but I suppose, if we're using these terms, what we've built in the organization is, we're at 100 schools, over 100 schools now, and helped over 28,000 students, and that number just keeps going up. With the way that we can build with this technology, you touched on it earlier, it's just so fast how quickly we can build these schools. So we're able to help students faster. So I see that, those impact numbers as the legacy, if we're going to use those terms. Again, I don't think I ever used the term legacy. But I guess that would be it. It would be the impact that that we've made through Classroom of Hope, that the team's been able to create. And to see how that impact changes lives and helps kids.
And it's interesting, isn't it? How, I mean, you've mentioned, and I get it. I resonate why there's a, ooh, okay, that's a bit, I'm going to call it uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, I
Because
guess it is a little bit.
we don't go about this work. Like I've met some amazing human beings that have done some unbelievable things, and you wouldn't know it. You just wouldn't know it. You would have no idea. Their names don't appear anywhere, and yet their impact is like 10x and 100x, and therefore the word legacy is a little, oh, okay, that's a little different. That's, I'm not sure if that's the purpose here. But in fairness, people will always remember you not for what you did, but for how you made them feel. And that resonates in a big way as it relates to legacy. Impact is legacy. And so I really appreciate you being vulnerable in the way you answered that. That was really cool. So something a little simpler for you, right? And
Okay.
this is always something that, again, I'm into the journey called life, and I really don't spend a day where I think about, geez, I still feel like I'm 21, right? I still feel like, that younger version of myself. So here is again just a different type of question for you, and I'm really curious. If you could go
Okay.
back to tell your 17-year-old self three things, Nicola, what would they be?
I would start by saying to stop sweating the small stuff. I
Okay.
am a worrier. I always have been. And I think I'm only now learning at this stage of my life how important it is not to worry. I guess how not how important it is not to worry, but how it doesn't help anything. It really doesn't get you anywhere. It really, it just actually negatively impacts any situation. And so best not to worry. Have a bit of trust that things are going to work out the way that they should. And if they don't, or if they go a different way, then there's another path with that too. So yeah, definitely tell my 17-year-old self to, and actually probably my current self to, just yeah, tone down the worrying a little bit. And as part of that, I think also to be kinder to myself. I think that would be the second thing too. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I think that also has been something that hasn't always served me. It's also something that I'm learning in this stage of my life to, just be kinder to myself. And some of the things that I say to myself, I would never say to a friend, or I would never say to a colleague. So, just practicing that kindness for myself as well.
Yeah,
And
that's so cool. That's good.
yeah, I think the third thing would be to spend more time in states of exploration, creativity, play. I've always sort of, I mean, I always love to learn new things. I'm always exploring in the sense that I'm a forever student and I always want to better myself. I want to learn new skills. But it's only been since having kids that I've explored or created or played just for the sake of play, just to play for no other reason. I'm a terrible artist and painter, but I love to paint. I just love it. And I paint with my kids all the time. And they don't care what the outcome is. I don't care what the outcome is when I do it with them. No one but them's going to see it. And yeah, it hasn't been since they came into my life that I really have just done things just to do it, just because it's fun and just because I enjoy it. And so doing more of that throughout my life, I think, yeah, should have definitely started doing that when I was 17, for sure.
Well, isn't that amazing? And the cycle of life, we get these opportunities to reflect and review, and there's no two ways about it. There'd be plenty of us out there that if we had an opportunity to speak to our 17-year-old self, we would be, as the road and the journey goes, we'd be sharing what you've just in your case, what you've just said. I love the state of worry, the state of negative energy. Like, it happens, right? I mean, I had a situation about a week ago where, we've committed to 250 people, our clients, attending our big event in November, and I've been away overseas on work and play for the month of July. And I've come back and the numbers are not where they need to be. I expected us to be at about 120 registrations right now, and we're currently sitting at about 50 or 60. And there's no two ways about it. I had a moment where I thought, holy shit, this is gonna be a little tricky. We got sponsors and we got commitments, and it's really a big step up for us and where we're going. And in fairness, for about 2 or 3 days, I had this level of perturbation, negative worry, right? So even it is such a, and then I needed a weekend to just get my breath, get my head into, hang on, this is an opportunity, and it's a high performance challenge. We got some work to do, and if it was easy, Stefan, everyone would be doing it. So come on,
Absolutely
let's go.
right.
And therefore, a bit of clarity, a little bit of a conversation with those that I trust to give me some pushback to say, mate, this is a walk in the park for you. Get on with it. Get on with it. Be comfortable with uncomfortable, right? And off we go. And the numbers now are starting to step up, and the activity supports the outcome that you want. Now, you can do nothing and expect everything, and that's going to create a worry. Or you can do something and create something, and now you're on the journey. So
Absolutely.
I love that sharing that you just put in the space, and that's wisdom. That's absolute experience that speaks to what would you be saying to your 17-year-old self about worrying, but also the perfection thing, which is definitely a dream taker for many. So
Sure.
thank you, Nicola. Really cool. Look, if you could remove all barriers, now you're working on some pretty cool stuff in some amazing places in the world, and the experience that you're putting yourself in the space for is unbelievable. However, if you could remove all barriers and constraints, what project would you do and why?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. I would fund our current project in Indonesia. I would just fund the whole thing or have it funded. It doesn't have to be me. I don't care where the funding comes from. I would just have it all funded. And yeah, just get all these schools rebuilt, help all these kids get back into school. And I mean, if we're dreaming that big, why stop there? You know, let's just get this technology all across Indonesia, clean up Indonesia's plastic waste problem. Yeah, I would really just put everything into this project in Indonesia.
And as you share that, my mind goes to the ripple from that success, the ripple from that that very successful Yellow Brick Road, and what's next, and what beyond perhaps our years here, what's the ripple of that technology, that the ability for people to build, support the environment, support the education. Not only in the third world countries that are obvious, but also, even in first world countries like Australia, if you think about what's
Oh,
happening
absolutely.
in so many areas that are considered disadvantaged or not as, equal to others, and the ability to perhaps solve problems in our own backyard here, perhaps solve problems in other parts of Asia and Africa. And I know the reach of the block solutions is far and wide. However, solving the Indonesian issue is a fantastic, wow, let's just get this one sorted first. And this is big, but the ripple of that
Absolutely. I mean, I
and
think
the
this
leverage of that.
technology could go anywhere and should go anywhere. I mean, Indonesia is not the only place, firstly, that needs infrastructure. You know, it's not the only place that needs housing. As you've touched on, there's definitely a need for housing in Australia. The schools, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to measure some of the impact numbers that we can create if we build, these 100 schools that we want to build. We know we're going to help 21,000 students. You know, we know the amount of plastic we'll clean up from the environment. It's going to clean up 540 tons of plastic waste from the environment. We know that it's going to reduce carbon emissions by 2,640 tons, and we can actually measure all of these numbers. And, I can't speak for other countries at this stage because we haven't looked at those numbers, but I know that if that's the impact that we can make here with just 100 schools, what start thinking about 4,000 homes or, in Indonesia or in Australia or in other places in the world that need it. You know, not only are you getting families, people and families into safe housing or children into safe schools, but you're also cleaning up the environment. And, every country is dealing with a plastic problem. This isn't unique to Indonesia. So I just think, I mean, it would be so hard to measure those impact numbers, but they'd be massive. Absolutely massive.
No barriers, no constraints. There it is, right? Starting with step one, Indonesia, and off we go. We're off on an amazing and no glass ceiling as it relates to the impact. I love that. So we're speaking with Nicola Curtin, co-founder and creative director at Classroom of Hope, a phenomenal human being that's doing some amazing work with a team predominantly based out of Indonesia and rippling out, as we just heard. One thing that got my attention, I want to come back to this, socio-cultural anthropology. I want to know more about that. I mean, not many things get my curiosity antenna to the point of peak that one
Yeah.
has. Tell me more about that. I mean, what was the inspiration to become someone that is a champion of that? I'm really curious, and
I
I'm also
fell
looking for
into
some
it, to be
motivation.
honest with you. I
This could be
totally
something
fell
that's
into
going
it.
to motivate me to think about, I don't know, just so what is that?
So I initially went to university to pursue an English degree. I wanted to be a writer, and I did finish my English degree, but while I was there, as a lot of people do, you take electives in university. And I just took an anthropology course and just loved it. And a lot of people, when they think about anthropology, they think about like digging up bones and, all sorts of things. But I specifically focused on sociocultural anthropology, which meant that I studied people and cultures. It could be anything from the way that they interact with one another to the foods that they eat to their religions, the histories. And, I that's what sort of sparked my love for journalism, really, because I initially thought when I was doing my anthropology degree, I thought, okay, I think I want to get into journalism and tell human stories from across, the globe. I was thinking I'd go work for like National Geographic, that was the like vision, that was the goal. And then I went traveling, as a lot of people do. And on those journeys, ultimately that's what led me to meeting Duncan, and in the end, being with Classroom of Hope. And then I pursued my journalism degree and thought I'd be merging these two things to go and, pursue a life in National Geographic. But instead, I ended up, working in this non-for-profit world, which, funny enough, I still got to use that skill set. It's so interesting how life does this whole thing where it swerves you and, takes you in different directions. But in the end, I do get to connect with people in different cultures, and I do get to, understand some bit about the way that they live and, their values, their cultures. We need to understand these things when we build in other countries. We can't just go in and assume that we have any idea what's going on. That's why we always partner with local NGOs, because they know what's right for their country. They know what their people need, and we listen to that, and we really take that on board in every place that we work. And I think having the background in sociocultural anthropology was a really good base for me to understand that, working in a community collectively and collaborating is the best way to for everybody to get the full picture, so that the impact that we create is real and tangible and necessary. And I mean, when I walked into my first anthropology class, I couldn't imagine how I was going to be using it, but here we are.
Thank you, Nicola. You've just really filled a void for me, and again, I might be a little ignorant, who knows? But that was an amazing
I don't think, most people go, what's
yeah,
that?
it sounds interesting, right? It sounds like, well, I should have done that too, right? But well done. Thank you so much for sharing that and the insight of how one connects to the next, and here we are, and how it's played out. And I think there's some wise words there in the sharing as to I started this not wanting to be that, but look where I found myself and look where I am. I think there's awesome pieces there that is what seems to be your journey right now. Hey, if you could have a dinner party, right? If you could have a dinner party with just three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why would you choose them? And don't choose your husband.
Okay.
Because I know
Get to have dinner with him all the
he's not allowed to come, right? If you could have a dinner party with just three people, dead or alive, who would they
Okay.
be and
All
why
right.
would you choose them?
Well, my first choice would definitely be Brené Brown.
Mm.
I love her work around vulnerability. I love her work around bravery and courage, and leadership. Anytime I get an opportunity to read one of her books or just watch one of her TED Talks, I just always walk away from her, feeling really inspired. I'd love to sit with her for an evening. I just think I'd learn so much from her and just walk away like just super inspired to take on the world and take on life. And probably Greta Thunberg. I think she's such a cool, passionate young woman with such, again, she's so courageous, like she just has no hesitation to stand up to whoever she needs to stand up to, fight for this planet, to fight for the environment. And I hope that she's an example of what is coming in this next generation of, people that will fight for what's right and for what's good. And again, I think if I had dinner with her, I'd be pretty inspired. And my dad passed away when I was 14. And I've always dreamed that we could have had an adult conversation. I just wonder what that would have been like. So yeah, those three.
Wow, so cool. I think Brené Brown would also be a lot of fun.
Oh,
Right.
she'd be so much fun.
She'd be so much fun. She'd be right into it and possibly the last person to leave. But thank you for sharing that. That was so cool. So cool on so many fronts. So cool. If I can help you unwind three financial decisions in your life, how much more money would you have right now?
I don't know if I can answer that one. Because I don't know. Look, when Duncan and I set off to, in the non-for-profit world, I guess you can imagine there was sacrifices that had to be made. There were, personal financial decisions that had to be made. We hardly earned a salary for the first few years that we started. If I looked at all of those years and tried to count out the money, yeah, sure. Like we'd probably have some more savings. But then I don't know if we would have built what we built. And I don't know if we would have gotten to where we have gotten to. And we certainly didn't enter this space with finances at the forefront. Or personal finances at the forefront anyway. So yeah, that's a tricky one for me to answer. I don't think I've got a real straight up answer to that, because I think the decisions that I've made financially, that Duncan and I have made together as a couple financially, have brought us to where we are. And if we'd made different decisions, maybe we would have more funds in our account, but a lot of the other things would be different, and I wouldn't want to change any of that.
I love your answer. Your answer is a very raw and on point and well done. That is so cool the way you have responded. And I don't need to say that, but yeah, that was great. Awesome. Hey, if there was one question you don't want me to ask you, what would that be?
Probably the last one.
Isn't that interesting? What is the best piece of advice you've ever had? This is a again, our podcast is very much focused on I'm yet to meet a bad business, but I do meet interesting business owners and leaders that are phenomenal as it relates to their journey and the reflection that comes with it. But what is the best? What is the best piece of advice? And again, you may need a couple of days to think about this, but let me get you on the hop here, right? What is the best piece of advice you've ever received in your life?
I guess it's pretty simple, actually. My grandfather just always told me to do everything for love. Do your work for love, marry for love, live your life for love. And I honestly, maybe that sounds a bit cheesy for some people, but I love what I do, and my life is really full of love. And I wake up every day and I really get to enjoy not only what I do, but every element of my life. So, yeah, do what you love.
Oh, that's so
Simple.
cool. And it is simple, and they're the best pieces of advice. And I thank you for sharing. Nicola Curtin is the co-founder and creative director at Classroom of Hope. We so are proud and honored to have her here at this episode that we've just shared. And thank you, Nicola. If there's any parting shots as you leave us right now, love to hear them, but I really appreciate your time. Your sharing, your rawness, your vulnerability, and most importantly, I'm in awe of the impact you and your team there at Classroom of Hope are creating, at Business Benchmark Group and our community here as the CEO and founder of this organization that's making its own level of impact in various ways. I know what it takes to lead and the impact of the courage needed to lead, right? And I just want to from leader to leader, well done and congratulations. I and we are in awe of all that you do, and the future is very bright as it relates to the journey you're
Oh,
on.
thank you so much. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank you and to thank Business Benchmark Group for supporting our work. You know, we're so looking forward to hosting you guys in Lombok in a few weeks' time. Tanya Armstrong, our new CEO, will be there with me as well. I know she's looking forward to it as well. And yeah, I mean, it's organizations like yours and people like you that, you know, get behind what we do, that make what we do possible. So thank you. And, you know, for doing it again this year. Yeah, we're just really grateful and really excited to show you the impact in a few weeks.
Thank you so much, Nicola Curtin. I appreciate your time.
Bye. Thank you.